these are the commands, decrees, and laws the Lord your God directed me to teach you to observe, that in the land that you're crossing the Jordan to possess, so that you, your children, and their children after them may fear the Lord your God as long as you live by keeping all the decrees and commands that I give you, so that you may enjoy a long life. Hear, O Israel, be careful to obey, so that it may go well with you and that you may increase greatly greatly in a land flowing with milk and honey, just as the Lord, the God of your fathers, promised you. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit in the home and when you walk by the road and when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads and write them on the doorpost of your houses. When the Lord your God brings you into the land he swore to their fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But he was very cognizant, speaking the last words. Would you listen pretty carefully to the last words? Speaking the last words, he says, I want you to think about a legacy. And that, by the way, is the working title of a book that I have been working on for some time, collecting data in the era of leaving a legacy. How do you go about leaving a legacy? Material that deals with grandparenting, but more. I've decided grandparenting is just a small part of leaving a legacy. Leaving a legacy starts early and goes all the way through. Now this section today, we're talking about in the second session, is materials that talk about strategies that work. And again, the material is in this book, Raising Faithful Children in the Fast-Paced World. And the first several chapters dealt with eight messages loud and clear. Then we talk about parenting that empowers. We're talking about the Christian mama, the intentional father, the intentional mother. And now we're talking, there's two chapters in the book on strategies of the heart and strategies for living. And I'll put those together in this. And then the next session tomorrow, we talk about discipline that empowers. And we'll use that material tomorrow as well. We'll talk about some other things besides the material that's in the book. But there's a whole lot more in the book than what I'll be able to cover. Let's bow for a moment. Now, Father, help me to say again some things that'll open some eyes. There may be 50 or 60 practical suggestions in this material. Ideas that may work, but help us, Father, not to feel overburdened with a whole lot of things to do, but rather help us to think about two or three that grab us, two or three that stand out to each individual family. And may they use those two or three things to begin moving the family along in the direction you want them to go. This is my prayer in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, the first strategy is take care of yourself in the sense that you spend time. The first material talks about time. We're living in a real time pressure. Many of you may not be. The very fact that we're here on a Thursday, what does that say? You're here all day on a Thursday. Somebody took off work. You know, somebody didn't work. Maybe the wives don't work. How many people just in your church can take off Thursday and Friday and come here? Not many do that. We're living today where husband and wife usually are both working and they come home, they're hurried. They've got the children, they've got a lot of responsibilities, and it's a different age. I grew up with a mother that stayed at home until she was later, after we got off, then she went back to school. She had to work early on, full time, though, when Dad couldn't get a job in 1929 when the stock market crashed. And some people think I caused it because I was born that same year. Well, when the stock market crashed, and we just struggled and struggled, and Dad lost a job. He was a superintendent with A&P, and he lost that job. Went to work one day, and the door was locked, barred, and he couldn't go to work. And that's how he knew. Lost all of his retirement, lost all of his savings. Everything was gone. Mother had to work for $1 a day to put cabbage on the table for 4 kids and 2 people. And that was tough on a man's ego not to be able to find a job anywhere. But those kind of times are the times that our family looks back to and says, yes. Because out of that came 4 pretty good kids. The other 3 besides myself are really good. And 2 women that have given themselves to God's kingdom and a guide, and their children and their children have turned to be great kids. And it was out of those tough times that great people usually come. Because tough times either make you or break you, depending on your attitude. And so we got to spend time. The very thing we think we don't have is the very thing we've got to spend time on meditation, just quiet. And one of the great things that happens when we've got this little place out in the country is, man, it is out in the country. The planes hardly fly over us. You can hear some cars going down the highway half a mile away. Not many. It's a country highway. And that creek running, and the birds, and the ants, the kind that are really bad. What do they call those suckers? Fire ants. Now, when the grandchildren learn to dance when the fire ants are around. And that's a lesson they need to learn. They need to learn what a cotton mouth is, too. But that's just part of nature. Getting out there is kind of learning the bad stuff with the good stuff. You can't enjoy the good stuff if you don't have the bad stuff. If you're going to eat, you're going to have to work to earn the money to eat. And so all of that goes together. I'm asking you, number one, to spend some time alone by yourself. When I spend alone, I try in the mornings to read the book and to journal. Don't do it as often as I really. I do it every week. I try to do it every day. If I miss very many days, I can tell it. My relationship with the Lord, the way I speak, the tone of voice I speak, the frustrations I have, I can almost measure them by how much time I spend with the Lord in the morning. You say, I haven't got that kind of time. Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. You can put your feet over there to that edge of that bed and read one verse in about 5 seconds. And if you just give yourself, can you start with 5 seconds? It will so improve your attitude, you'll see it, that you'll want to read 10. And you know good and well you can read a minute or two. And then the first thing you know, you'll be reading 5 minutes, 10 minutes. You may get up even a little early and spend 30 minutes with the Lord in the morning. I'm telling you, folks, before we start talking about any strategies, any things that we might do to help our family, the thing that we can do most is to get right inside with our Lord. That's it. I could stop right there, and that's the biggest message you'll hear all day. Time with you and the Lord. Number 2, time with you and your spouse and the Lord. Your husband or wife, you two have to be together. When we talk about discipline tomorrow morning, the discipline demands in a family is that mom and dad be 100% agree. You got to be like this. Well, that takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. And it continues to grow. Gladys and I have been married a bunch of years now, 47, 48 years. And we're still growing closer to each other. Love her more every day. I think that both of us would say that because of the time we put in and the experience we put in and the humor that we're not so defensive anymore with each other. We'll talk about that. I started to say, Carl and I are doing a Merry Christmas seminar beginning tomorrow night in Edmond. That's the first thing we talk about. It's time, death to yourself, time alone with yourself, time with a spouse. And then 3, time with your children. And that, you knew where that was going, didn't you? Time with self, time with spouse, time with children. Let me just give you some stories about some of the people we interviewed. Here is a guy that is the president of the Board of Trustees of Pepperdine, a very successful Los Angeles lawyer. He gets up in the morning quite early, like 5 or 6, I think, toward 5. studies, spends time with the Lord. Then he's with his wife and children as they eat breakfast. And then he takes his children to school. Then he comes back and walks with his wife. And you say, well, when does he get to work? About 9 o'clock. He leaves about 8 or 9 o'clock to get into L.A. because the traffic is down then. He stays late at the office to make up the full day, but the traffic's back down again. And then he comes home, and the wife has waited, and the children have waited for Daddy to come home to eat. That was characteristic, by the way, of almost every family we talked to. Every evening meal, with rare exception, was together. One policeman I talked to, they didn't eat till 10 o'clock at night because they wanted Daddy to eat with them, and Mama held them over, and they just planned their schedule that way. Now, it's not for everybody, but I'm just telling you, the evening meal is not just to eat. The evening meal is time to talk, time to rehearse, time to talk about the report card, time to talk about the music, the recital, the junior, whatever things they're into, time to talk. Let the eggs get dry on the plate. Let the stuff stick on the plate. That's all right. The talk time is more important than that. And you ladies that are so fastidious that you've got to have the table cleaned, well, then go to the sink and come back to the table or something, or just don't be so picky. Just enjoy the dirty table with the kids. That time is super important in the evening. So, time of the self, time of the spouse, time of the kids. That time, you can't... They say, well, we spend quality time. Get off that stuff. Instead of quantity. Hey, you cannot have quality time unless you have quantity time. Now, don't let me forget to talk about competition and Little League and sports, okay? You remind me of that one. Because I want to give us some time. Wow. We got 30 minutes, don't we? Stop at 45. Is that right? Say yes. Something. Yeah, okay. Okay. Let's go to talk about some other things that hook to this. Before I do, let me read you something. This comes from Gandhi, who has written the book, Back to the Family. He said, have children, and he's quoting a mother in New Jersey. She says, have children only if you want to share your life with them. If you don't think they're going to be the best people in the world to spend your time with, then don't have them. That's pretty straight, isn't it? She went on to say, there are other things you can do. You don't want to spend time with your kiddos, do something else. Don't have children. Now, I know that's kind of, you say, hey, it's too late now. Here's another one. People are beginning to say, talking about time, this is crazy. We're not living, we're doing lunch. The rebellion is against time pollution. The feeling that the essence of what makes life worth living, the small moments, the special family getaways, the cookies in the oven. When was the last time? Cookies in the oven, night fishing with the kids, asleep next to the lanterns, weekend drives, the long dreamlike summer. So much of this has been taken from us. Or have we given it up? And for what? Pretty good, huh? So you get to the end of your life, and you have plenty of money to retire on. You've been working all this to give to your kids. You got money to retire on. You got money to give them succession planning. But they're rotten kids. Well, they may not even be rotten. They may be very nice, polite people, but they don't know the Lord, and they don't know you. Which would you rather have? I told you we don't have the television. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. Let me just get back to it, and I'll just take it when it gets there. Let's talk about some spiritual strategies. Here's one lady. She said, we believe in the whole life practice of Christianity and baseball and cheerleading, and that's how we taught our kids to live every day, all day. That's more important than devotionals. Sounds sacrilegious, doesn't it, for her to say that's more important than devotionals? But she goes on to say, the devotionals are important, but how you live the other 23 hours of the day is what counts. As you walk, by the way, Lie down, rise up. See, it's not a matter of, okay, all kids, line up here now. We're going to have a Devo. And so they begin to hear this is not fun. Well, the reason it's not fun is because you got a little one and a big one. Is that right? It's in the evening, and the little one's needs and the big one's needs are different. So there comes a time in which, well, what happened with us, we decided that we'll just put, as we put them to bed, young ones first and on up, we just go to bed with them. And so we put them to bed and we go in there with them and we read and we do prayers with them. One child, two parents, get a lot of attention every night. The next one, the next one, the next one. And that's devotional time. Also, we found when our boys, 1, 6, 5, the little one is 6'4", and when we put them to bed and mother is just this tall, Gladys just this tall, and it wasn't working too good because these boys are awake. They don't want mom hugging and kissing. You know, them. They're big, tough jocks, and they grow beards bigger than daddy, and they got hair on their chest. They got all of mine. I don't have any hair. Well, so what did she do with those big old lugs? She'd go in the morning when they're out of it. You know, they're just kind of drugged. It's time to get up, and she'd wake them up with hugging on them. Oh, mom, you know, but they still liked it. You know what I mean? So you just have to fit the strategies with what works with your kids. And so taking them to bed or hugging on them in the morning, that kind of touching, loving, holding is good stuff. Now, the spiritual devotionals are fine. Let me tell you what another fellow of the family did, the Bonneau family. He sat at the breakfast table. He didn't eat breakfast with the children. As they were eating breakfast, six kids, as they were eating breakfast, he had a little chalkboard about this long, and he just drew pictures, and he just diagrammed stories of the giants, and he just had a little picture story at the breakfast table. You've heard Carl Burkeen talk about his breakfast time when the devotionals at night didn't work as well. Then at the breakfast table, he has a little book devotional that has the proverbs. He always reads the proverb of the day. And he'd read it while they were at breakfast. So breakfast is a good time to have that devotional. And that kind of thing works also. The stewardship of money, this isn't mentioned very much, but one of the strategies that good parents leave out is money. Teaching kiddos how to use money early on. One of the families I talked with, they had so much money. They had three jars. I think they were fruit jars, you know, canyon jars. And they put money in it for the Lord. Each week they'd give an allowance. Money in for the Lord, money in it for themselves, money in it to, I've forgotten what the third one was. And school lunches, that's what it was. What the point of the story is, school lunches. So he spent too much of his school money. Well, you know, so many parents say, oh, honey, you spent more than it. Well, I'll give you some more. She didn't say that. She said, when you get back this evening, I'll have you the best meal you've ever seen. But he didn't eat any dinner that day. By the way, he learned how to spread his money out a little better. And what about the giving? Let me share you something. This comes on the topic of giving. It comes from a very reliable person, Manier, a scholar. He says, the tender, generous side of children often goes untapped and unnurtured because adults don't devote the time or the thought to develop an attractive strategy of giving. One of the guys that I talked to, he had children of his own. He was a child of the people we were interviewing, but he had a number of children of his own. He said, I want to be just like my dad. My dad gives 40% of everything he makes away, and I want to be just like him. Now, did his dad tell the son, you give 40%? Or did the son see the daddy give 40% and say, I want to be just like him? I was so proud of my grandkids the other day, twin grandkids, a boy and a girl. It always amuses me when somebody says, are they identical? But anyway, twins are special. And the boy in this particular case is just almost, it's almost an inversion. The girl's mindset, she runs things. And the boy is the sweetest guy you have ever seen. And it came time, you know, we're going to give. How much are you going to give? And it was a Christmas program. And so the little girl gave like 15, and ended up about 15% of whatever she had in her savings. And the parents were bragging on her, but the little boy had tears in his eyes, and he just gave it all. Really gave too much. But that tender, compassionate side of little children, oh, it just pulls at you, doesn't it? And we've got to work on that beautiful, tender side of children that are willing to give it. And please, let's don't be so selfish with ourselves and stingy that our children grow up doing what we've done, maybe. And, but rather, wouldn't it be neat if our kids did give more than they ought? What would devastating thing would happen to them down the line? You say, well, they wouldn't have any retirement. I'm about tired of hearing about retirement, too. And I'm almost tired of hearing about insurance and security. Where is your security, folks? Where's my security? Something tells me, I'm in a group of six people on Wednesday night, and we're hoping to develop that. It's now spawned into two groups of, I have to drive 35 miles to get to my church where Phil Ware is my preacher. I just like his preaching. He's one of my students back yonder, and I like the way that church does things. But I'm out in the boonies 35 miles away, and several others that worship there are out here too. I can tell you that if something happened to Paul Faulkner that I couldn't pay my bills, those young couples, they're all young couples, got children of their own, I guarantee you those young couples would die for me. And I'll tell you what's more, if something happened to them, I'd die for them. And maybe that's better insurance than the stock market. And somewhere along the line, we need to develop that reliance on the Lord that we don't have to put up so much money and worry so much about our retirement. Tell you what else, if something happened to me. Though I've got two kids that are married to preachers, they don't make all that much. I guarantee you they'd take care of Mimi and Daddy Paul. And isn't that better insurance? But we get so wrapped up in the business of the world and the finances. And I'm not saying we shouldn't save it. I'm not saying we shouldn't be thoughtful. But when it comes to giving, it just looks like on many occasions in the Bible, there is absolute extravagance. The lady, that bad lady that broke that alabaster at Jesus' feet. The widow that gave everything she had, even though it was a mite. Jesus who gave his whole life. And I'm just saying, at some point, that the passionate side that our children have before we kind of blow it away. Boys don't cry. Yeah, boys do. Some grown men cry too. But I'm just saying that that passionate, loving, giving, generous side of children should be encouraged. And if there's a problem with it, it may be a good problem. Well, for whatever that's worth. I would have been content. This comes from the president of a division of IBM. It's a jet airplane sitting outside his door to take him anywhere in the United States. He told me, he said, I would have been content, Paul, to remain on the farm in Missouri. I hope I can give more than I take. I surround myself with givers. He has 12 guys that report to him, and they, I think, have about 144,000 that report to them. I surround myself with givers and I avoid takers. I always try to give more than I take. And the president of the CFO of Walmart, that's about the third biggest position in Walmart, told me, success is when you make it, you give it. By the way, now he is the president of the board at Harding University. Mother and dad would have been the same people if they lost everything tomorrow. Their priorities are not money. Those folks had money, but this is what the children are saying. And another guy told me, Paul, I haven't gotten used to anything I can't live without. My question to you is, have you? Have we got something we can't live without? Let's talk about environment then for a little bit. The strategies about environment. The television is one of them. We unplugged the television. When the television broke, by the way, isn't it amazing? When I graduated from college, nobody had television sets. Not a television. There was one television set in Abilene, Texas, when I graduated from college, and they had to get their signal from Fort Worth, 150 miles away, and a tower, a big old thing that ran up, and it didn't pick up doodly. And that's when I was out of college. But boy, it came in a big swell, didn't it? And now I'm wondering what would happen to you if you just turned it off. What would happen to the whole family? Would there be any dysfunction, do you think? What if you went home tonight and just unplugged the thing? Would there be any outcries? What would happen? And I'm not saying it's all bad. It's not the content. So many of us as Christians are hooked on the content is bad. I'm telling you, it is the way they use time is bad. When you get going like this, and we can make people nervous psychologically. I can make you nervous as all get out by just putting you in time binds where that we get into a problem and we get out of a problem every 30 minutes. And we get into one and we get out of one every 30 minutes. Does that happen? Or we drag one on the afternoon soaks. We drag problems for a year or two. We could just go on and on. So it's not just the content. It's the way that thing goes. Furthermore, it's a very passive apparatus. A computer at least is interactive. Watch television. Think about it. I'm not telling you what to do about television. You do your thing. But do spend some time in your meditation in the morning thinking about how much time is being used in the content. Let me tell you, talk about computers. Everyone ought to have a computer today. It's so important to be able to talk with your grandkids and everybody else on email. But along with the good, pornography is horrendous. I don't know how many ministers I've talked to. One was telling me that his hand was trembling because all he had to do is punch the next button and there it was. Dear friends of mine in the ministry have had to resign pornography. One of the top people in our brotherhood, that you'd know his name like so, realized when his wife was away that he punched in on the pornography stations, very many plural, and in 3 days was addicted, and he knew it, so addicted to porno that he had to get professional help from a clinical psychologist. 3 days. We're talking about top people. People that I love and you love. It is that addictive. To men, ladies may not understand it. What I'd say to you gentlemen, and for you to somehow teach your children, you fix it to where that, in my judgment, anybody that walks into your office, the screen's facing the door. That's just a little simple thing. It's a way of self-checking, that you're not sitting back in your... See, the television sets in a big room, usually. But the computer often is sitting at a place that's kind of secluded. And I'm just telling you that every time I open AOL, there's 1 to 5 messages on, we've got the sexiest sluts that'll do anything you want them to do. Punch the button and see. And that's, folks, all you have to do. Are you aware that's all you have to do? Is run the little arrow up there and punch the button. And there they are doing everything you want them to do. From age 18 to 21. You know, guys know what I'm talking about, don't you, if you're on AOL? Every day I open it, it's there saying, Faulkner, punch the button. And they write all these cute little things to get you to punch the button. One time. I haven't punched one button yet. I know better, but I'm tempted. And you guys tell me you're not tempted. You're lying through your teeth. Did I say that? Well, let's go on. Television, computer. One of the things that some of these families did, they kept their children at home. They didn't let them go out and work at McDonald's. Here's what one professional says. Children who work too much at an early age often find they don't have time for other activities that will be much more vital to them in the long run. Another drawback is the tendency to lose sleep, eat poorly, and experience work-related anxieties too soon. Keep them at home. You say, what are they going to do at home? Well, there's a lot. Actually, a child's work is school, not work. His work right now, her work right now is school. Making good grades, study habits, all of those kind of things that go with good schooling, especially reading, we'll come to that in a minute. And that's their work. So that's why some of these parents chose, I'm not saying you can't let your children work, I'm just passing on possibilities. Another one is nature. That environmentally, let those kids get out into God's nature. We surround ourselves with buildings like this that are air-conditioned, houses, air-conditioned, cars that are air-conditioned, so we get in our air-conditioned car in our garage and drive to an air-conditioned theater or a coliseum or a workplace or a church,
And we surround ourselves all day with stuff that we made. Well, why don't you get out with the scorpions and just kind of sleep out at night? And one of the problems happens is that now it's more and more dangerous to camp, and I know that, and that's a problem. But our family, we camp all over God's creation, in tents and in campers and all that kind of stuff, and they remember it as some of the... Everybody had a job. Gladys liked it because I always cooked when we were out. And so that was just a whole lot of fun for her and the kids, and everybody had a job. The camping and the nature experiences. We caught a little trout one time, and it was up there by the Teton area and Yellowstone area. And the little trout jumped up and said, "Oh, Daddy, I found a little trout." And it was out on the rocks. It popped out of the ocean. The waves were blowing in. And so we said, "Oh, what do we do?" I said, we can't throw him back in the lake. He'll pop right back out again. Let's take him over this little bitty. It's a wet spot, 10 or 15 feet across. Let's put him there and see if we can get him going again. And we put him in there, and that didn't work. So we had to give him artificial respiration. And he came alive. But then he started going in circles. And we said, "Oh, brain damage, you know." And then in a minute, he just shot off. Well, those kids remember that story. In that same camping trip, they remember when a lady died right across the street from us. Brad came running to us and said, "Daddy, the man's hollering help." And I ran across over there and gave the lady mouth to mouth. They had been asleep. And the two children and the husband, he was out of the tent just wringing his hands. And so I just went in and did what I thought she should do, mouth to mouth. And by that time, a physician that was camping came up and he started mouth to mouth. And then something happened that disallowed her to live. And we just had to wait for her heart to stop beating. It's just a horrible thing. And I never will forget walking with that guy and suggesting to him that in the middle of hurts like this, that God's always stood close. And he said, "I've done without God for 30 years. I'd do without God for another 30 years. He was a professor, moving from one university to another university. But our kids remembered when we took him and his family back over to that house without their wife, their mama. Those experiences that you get out, we don't get out enough. We're always with ourselves so much, with our own family, with our own brotherhood. I think it's time for us to kind of get out where Jesus was. He was with everyone, and he was a light, and he was salt. It's hard to be salt and light, like he's talking about, if we're always with enjoying our one another's fellowship all the time. Let those kids see what you value in terms of this world and how you deal with the world situation. Social skills, social strategies. I think manners. Listen to one family told me, he says, the family was big, big, big on manners. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, ma'am. Please. These are the things that these families said are important. One of the other parents said, kids want to be liked, and manners make them likable. Not Victorian, but at least a thank you and please and excuse me. Not interrupting and shaking hands and greeting people pleasantly when being introduced and looking people straight in the eye and listening to them when they speak. And that, by the way, happens more often, I think, with these homeschool children that I've been around than it does with others. I know that's a generalization, but it seems to be that our children need to be with adults enough. And if our kids are always with kids, they get in from school and they go play soccer. And then if it changes to football, and then it changes to track, and then it changes to basketball, and then it changes. And if you got two kids of different ages, how many games are you at on Saturday? That leads me to say something about then this business of competition. I have some problems with competition. Little League, and y'all may throw me out of Tulsa, but let me just talk. I grew up, I'm a competitor by nature. You don't have to talk to me about competing. I still play tennis, and I beat you any way I can. It's legal, and some people, Rick actually keeps telling me that I play people illegally because I talk to them. I lob the ball way up high. And as it's coming down, I say, "Watch out for the sun, or get in your eyes." And, you know, talk to them. Not trash talk, just visiting with them, you know. But that's the kind of, I'm just saying that I, by nature, I compete. Men have a tendency. Have you noticed it, ladies? We compete on everything, you know. In school, in college, I was in the dorm, came through on a scholarship. And so we competed on everything. Have you ever heard of a whirl around Biff? Well, you need to know what a whirl around Biff is. And we somebody dropped a pocket knife, and it says it dropped it on that line. See if you can get it to close that line. And so it's just one, you know, who can beat whom? The problem is when you got little kids, before their muscles are really well formed, we got them out playing a ball, and I'm not concerned about the physical. I think parents are smart enough to take care of the physical. But when I saw that little kid, my kids did the same thing, folks. I came to the same thing. I didn't when I grew up, and you didn't when you... We competed all right, but we... Have you seen the outfits they put on today? Those shoes, $90 shoes, and stockings that pull up, and two pair of socks. One that's a sock, and the other just to look good. You know, they pull it up here, and then put their pants over this, and they got the leather belt, they got all this stuff. Man, that's nice. We just turned our shirts, our undershirts, wrong side out and called ourselves the Fruits of the Loom and went on. But we got it laid out pretty nice. And they don't want just plain... Will they buy Walmart shoes? Sometimes. They want which kind? Nike. Yeah. The Nike. Oh, I didn't give you any question time. Let me tell you what the outline for the rest of it is. Basically this. You got to spend time reading. One of the best strategies you can ever do is spend time read. Read. Even after the children learn to read, you read for them and read to them. We're still reading to our grandchildren. They love it. Gladys is reading Miss Pigglewiggle to third graders 2 nights ago. And they just snuggled up to Mimi and she's reading with the Pigglewiggle. And here they third graders. They can read, but they love to hear Mimi read. And so read. What they do, students make better grades in English and every other subject when they learn to read and read well. And when you've got people reading, you've got interaction between mom and children and all that. Read. Some of the guys brought a motor home. Out of a car home. And it was to build and rebuild. Show the boys how to build it. Another family had a tripod with the newspaper on the front of it. It had it by the front door. When you came in the front door, all the notes and all the memories and it was a journal of their whole family. Anytime they had a fuss about when they had to go to bed and the younger ones earlier, they wrote it on the board. It was a journal, a notebook of everything that they did. When I was there, it must have been that thick, and you could turn back and look at all the fusses and the fights and it was a hoot. Why not do something? Thursday night for some of the guys was a model night in which they built model stuffs. And then I told you, I'd tell you about the elders through a gambling party. Just see what you think about this one. The high school, his children were going to graduate from, a couple of them were going to graduate from high school in Dallas area, where he knew that they were going to have the big prom and the big dance and the big alcohol and the big drugs. It always happened. And he said, y'all go to that if you want to. But said, we're going to have a gambling party at our house. They said, what? Yeah, we're going to have... You mean blackjack and roulette and 21 or bust, they call it something else. What do they call it? Blackjack. How'd you know? She told you. So, all of those gambling stuff, they're going to have it right there in their home. They have a pretty large home. And it got word got around school, and you know what? They drained the school. And everybody that was there for the gambling, they had professional gamblers come in and throw it. They do that for businesses. They walked in the front door that evening, and the elder was standing there with his wife giving them out money, $25,000 Monopoly money. Go have a ball. $25,000. Just dishing out the $25,000 Monopoly money. They having a ball. They were just... And so about 10 o'clock, they came back, and he was the cashier. They kind of lost that 25, so he gave them another 25,000. So by about midnight that night, he said, okay, everybody, let me have your attention. How many have got $1 million? And all the gamblers, the professional gamblers, stood up. Well, how many of you guys have got $1 million? Nobody had it. You mean you didn't make any money off it? Well, how many got $100,000? None of the kids stood up. Well, how many have $50,000? None of them stood up.
He said, I gave you 50,000. What happened to my 50,000?
Sounds a little biblical, doesn't it?
Well, how many got 25,000?
Nobody. I think there was one guy in the whole group that had 25 or 50,000, 35,000, something like that. One guy. And then he said, did you learn anything? And then they had a devotional for all those people that were there that weren't really counting on that one so much. Had a ball, had a devotional, and they all went home. Do you think they may have learned more with that than a sermon on gambling Sunday morning? They saw it firsthand, and they saw how severe it was, and how big it was, and that it was really that way. Now, I think that would take the sting off Las Vegas a whole lot more than telling them how ugly Las Vegas is. Just let them see this is what happens. I've got 1 minute. Let's talk for 1 minute about individual differences. The strategy we're talking about is this. Let's say you had five kids. In our case, we had four. But just like a hand, every hand has a thumb. You have a thumb in your family? Guess who was the thumb in my family? You say, Paul. Yeah, that's right. Mother said that my grandfather said about me, he said, that's the only boy I've ever seen that couldn't even learn by experience. Well, I was the thumb. But the good thing about thumbs is the thumbs do oppose the other fingers, don't they? And they cause a lot of trouble because they're thumbs and they may be clumsy and they oppose the other fingers. The others just line up so nice and the thumb is a thumb. But if you're going to pick up something, which fingers would you pick it up with? A thumb and a forefinger. You wouldn't try to pick up a pen with these fingers. Pick off. Try that one. You'll fail. Thumb has a purpose even though he's different. Really weird. Remember that with your kids. And I'll close with this little thing that I put together. It's not good poetry, but the content is good. Swans don't run like a roadrunner. And roadrunners don't soar like an angel. Eagles don't sing like a mockingbird. And mockers don't fly in formation like geese. No other bird can hover like a hummingbird, nor any bird is faithful to his wife as a sparrow. And God made children like he made birds. There's no need of comparing or wishing for a different set of abilities or gifts. He wills that each child fly with his own set of instincts designed just for them with loving care. So honor, relish, honor the differences your kids have. God made them that way. Let's bow. Father, thank you for this beautiful group of people. Help us to have learned something about two or three things that we might use when we go back home today. Father, help us to know that all of these little stories and illustrations and gimmicks can't ever replace the need for us to spend time with you, time with our spouse, and time with our children. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.